It's time for Cofield and Company on a Football Friday. Live from the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas, it's Cofield and Company. On ESPN Las Vegas.
Yepers, 5 o'clock hours here. Steve Cofield on the road in Chicago getting ready for UNLV and Northwestern. The fellas are down at the Golden Nugget. The Adams, Adam Candy and Adam Hill, Mark McMillan moving on to bigger and better things this hour. Big 5 is on the way, and we're absolutely going to get into the Raiders and the Chiefs as we'll talk to one of the folks who covers the Raiders along with Adam Hill, Miles Simmons from the RJ, but let's get to it.
Battleborne Injury Lawyers presents the Big 5 at 5, number 5.
Man, I knew this one was coming. You know, desperate times call for desperate measures. Story out, and I had called this a couple weeks ago. I said, you know what? Without these chicken sandwiches at Popeyes, people are going to start going in there and just getting the fingers or the bites and just start chucking those on some buns. But now they've taken it even further. Right, Adam Hill? This is bizarro. This is the new, what is it, BYOB, right? The new BYOB.
Yeah, bring your own bun. Popeyes is saying, hey, we don't have the sandwich back yet, but all you got to do is order the tenders, bring your own bun, make your own sandwich right here in the store. This is insane.
Well, I mentioned this to JBT a couple of weeks ago, and John was like, that is an abomination. It's not the same thing as, because he was the only one on the show who had the chicken sandwich. I think he got the spicy and the regular. He's like, you cannot do that. The fingers and the bites are just completely different. You can't just smush them onto a roll and replicate one of the best chicken sandwiches in the history of ever.
Right, but you're seeing some desperation here.
Yes,
because
yes.
It's Popeyes actually had customers for the first time in like 20 years for like a week and a half. And now they're like, oh, everybody's gone. What are we going to do? Let's get them back in here. So they're trying to go make this promotion viral and get everybody talking about bringing their own bun, which we're doing. But this is preposterous. This is not how it's – they can't do this. They've got to bring the dumb sandwich back.
No, that's the ridiculous part here is that Popeyes is pitching this. Popeyes put its own video out.
I saw.
About bring your own bun. And, I mean, if you are the one saying to people to do this, you're admitting defeat.
Yeah, this is – it's just – it's got to stop. Listen, bring the stupid sandwich back and sell it or don't. Don't.
Well, they're trying.
They're living off this dream of three weeks ago.
God.
It's over. It's dead.
The dream of the chicken
it's
sandwich.
Dead. It's
so
over.
So not objective with your southern chicken joint bias.
Yeah, they've shown consistency. They've been doing it for a long time. Popeye's had a week and a half. Enough. You're not relevant anymore. Move on.
I don't know. Popeyes is the Tyrod Taylor of chicken joints.
Stop it.
You just saw one little ridiculous flash in the pan and all of a sudden.
Yeah. Popeyes never made the playoffs. Ever.
Wow. All right. Top four.
Number four.
Did you guys see the conversation with Rob Gronkowski recently where he just throws it out there in, you know, leisurely fashion? I probably had like 20 concussions. Is this cool even from a lughead like Gronk?
I don't have any problem with it because I think we pretty well accept that when guys who are old school football players talk about getting their bell rung or I blacked out a little bit, right? These are little mini concussions or maybe bigger concussions all along the way. Like at this point, we have to understand they weren't all going to be diagnosed. Players weren't going to talk about it. And Gronk's just like, yep, that's reality. Like, it's unbelievable.
Well, he's in a position, I think he's almost trying to cover, like, if I ever do anything dumb, just think back to this, because you know he's going to do some dumb things in his post-career time, and he can look back on this. I think maybe the more concerning thing to me is the fact that he said it's fixable. Like, he's just throwing it out there, like, this is fixable. I don't know where science backs that up, and you're also telling this younger generation that may be scared, like, their parents might be scared, there might be some concern about letting them play football and hit each other and tackle and take concussions. And he's like, eh, no big deal. It's fixable. Yeah, we're good. No problems. Like, no, this is a concern. This is something to be worried about. Like, sometimes it's overblown, sure. Not every single person that's ever stepped on a football field has brain damage and, you know, it turns into a danger to society because of it. But to just throw out that it's fixable after 20 concussions is irresponsible.
All right, next up.
Number three.
Can we get an objective answer from Adam Hill on Aaron Rodgers? Anything concerned or Aaron Rodgers related? Let's see what happens. Packers are taking on the Vikings. Aaron Rodgers has a special request of the fans. What is it? That they do not do the wave at Lambeau while the Packers are on offense. So first of all, is it in any way acceptable that Packers fans, while Green Bay is on offense, and this isn't like in a blowout at the end of the game, right? They're doing the wave during the game?
Yeah. No, I would say if there's anything I dislike more than Aaron Rodgers, well, it's Tim Tebow, but if there's anything in this conversation I dislike more than Aaron Rodgers, it's the wave. So this is a very conflicting one for me. The fans should never do the wave because it's stupid. But now that Aaron Rodgers requests them not to, I think they should just do it the whole game.
See, I feel like we have a situation here where two wrongs are ultimately going to make something right. I just don't know what the right is going to be, because it's absolutely wrong for Aaron Rodgers to be talking like this to the fans. Look, the moment that you drank half a beer while putting one finger up in the air while your offensive lineman was savaging you from the other side of the court, you gave up your right to tell us what we should and shouldn't do. On the other hand, I agree with Adam that the wave is an abomination of groupthink, of sheep going along with each other, that you see the people in the section next to you stand up, you're like, well, I should stand up too. No!
When's it my turn to stand up? I guess when it comes around
turn.
Again.
You just wait your turn to stand up again.
So I would never participate in that nonsense if I was a fan. But also, like, doesn't this tell other teams what really distracts you? Because in addition to being loud now, other teams should be doing the wave the whole time.
Every Packers opponent.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hate it's dumb, but if you're doing it for a purpose because it distracts the other team, I'd start doing it.
I love it. I love it. Aaron Rodgers giving away the secrets. All right, top two stories.
Number two.
He's kept one secret a long time.
How worried are we about Cam Newton and the Panthers with this start to the season? What do you guys think?
If I was a Panthers fan, I'd be worried.
Yeah.
I'd be very concerned. Listen, Cam Newton, we talked about it last year. As much as they tried to say there was nothing wrong, how often did we say, like, his shoulder is ruined? It's done. And then, you know, late in the year, they finally admitted it, and then he gets the surgery afterwards. He couldn't throw. And I've always kind of been a pro-Cam Newton guy from what he can do for a team, how he can elevate his teammates and make the team better, and I think he could be successful, but not if he's this injured. And he got it fixed, supposedly, in January. It doesn't look much better. I mean, there's at times he's able to get some zip on the ball, but he really can't push the ball downfield like he used to. I was watching some old film last night on Cam Newton. I think people forget how strong his arm was. I mean, there was times where defensive backs, you could just tell on the field, were baffled because they'd expect to be able to get to a ball on an out route and not even get there and have the pass zip in on the sideline. He can't do that anymore. And he also doesn't seem to be able to run either.
Well, that's really it, Adam. For me, it's the legs more than the arm, because I feel like what we're missing is that every third and three, third and four for the Panthers for years, you had to gear up mentally for the fact that it's going to be a Cam Newton run, and you can't stop him. And not only are they not designing runs for him anymore, but the last play of the game, look, call it what you want about the play. You took Cam Newton out of the play. You took the threat of Cam Newton out of the play entirely, and that, to me, from Ron Rivera's side, that's the part where Ron Rivera is saying, hey, you know what, don't even worry about him.
I have a thought on that, but I'll first say Cam Newton ruined that play. So Cam Newton, yes, he was out of the play. Cam Newton ran that incorrectly. He made it completely obvious what they were doing. You can't run the play like that if you're the decoy and you're moving out of the formation like that. He ruined it. But what they did, because Cam, they used to do the, as you're right, that used to be a Cam Newton slam dunk. That's what he's doing. But he's not that player anymore. You want to get the ball in your best player's hands. That used to be Cam Newton. It's not. It's McCaffrey. I think they made the right decision to let McCaffrey make a play. It just might not have been the right play, and I think it would have been the right play if Cam Newton would have disguised it a little better. But I don't know why he did it the way he did it. It certainly wasn't fooling anybody. Everybody kind of knew it was coming, and then they tried to run the reverse action. It just did not work out the way they wanted. McCaffrey almost got there. He might have been more well-advised to turn it up and just get that 1 yard and get the first down instead of trying to get to the sideline and get to the end zone, because I think he could have turned it up and just at least got inside the one. But he tried to make a bigger play and get the touchdown, and they fell short. But he is their best player now. The problem is he's really their only playmaker. if Cam Newton can't get the ball to the receivers, because Greg Olsen was working over the middle a little bit, but he's not really explosive in that way anymore. McCaffrey is the guy, but last week they tried to give it to him like 60 times, and you can't do that. So this week they tried to use him as a decoy for much of the game, and then they forgot about getting the ball in his hands. So there was like three possessions in a row he didn't touch the ball. There's a real problem in Carolina between the coaching and from Cam Newton's injury.
Maybe Cam screwed up the play as a decoy because his head's not right. Evidence after the game. All right, I'm all about his weird jackets and the kooky hats, but when did he decide to go to a post-game press conference looking like Susan Sarandon in Thelma and Louise before she goes off the cliff?
Wait, is she Thelma or Louise?
Damn it. I'm thinking Thelma.
I don't know.
But I saw a side-by-side today, Sarandon with sunglasses on and the headscarf, and I'm like, that's Cam Newton. When did men start wearing headscarves?
I loved it.
And flowery ones.
You loved it.
Oh, okay. Next week, I don't know what the hell your schedule is next week. If you are in during this Golden Nugget show, you're either bringing a headscarf and wearing it the entire show, with your hair all, like, fluffed up, or I'm bringing one.
Can you tie it? Like, I don't know how to wear it. I don't know how to go about, like, making that work, but I'll do it. In fact, I was thinking about trying to wear one for post-game coverage on Sunday up in the locker room. Can you imagine walking into the locker room after the game to do interviews wearing that thing?
I feel like you missed your opportunity. That should have been during Hard Knocks. Well, you're going to do it now?
Yeah, I should have done it during Hard Knocks. Well, he hadn't had it on at that point.
Hmm.
If he would have.
Candy, your take on the male headscarf?
For non-religious purposes, I would say not even close. Like, I mean, the Thelma and Louise comparison I hadn't thought of, but now I have the most vivid image in my head that I will not be able to let go of. And did you see at the beginning of the game, I'm not talking about the post-game press conference. No. When he walked in from the tunnel, they have now made that a sponsor activation. They have a big Coca-Cola glass bottle right there where Cam walks in. They somehow have made Cam Newton's ridiculous clothes into money.
I will say, as much as I liked it, you have to win. You can't wear that after a loss. That's got to be a winning. That's going to be
attire. You should have two fits ready. Yeah. Your winning fit and your losing fit. And if you lose, you better go conservative.
But are we shortening outfit to fit? When did that start?
Oh, you are way behind the times, Mr. I'm Millennial.
I don't know, Candy. I think you're stretching it. The fit?
The fit.
Seriously?
Oh, guys, this is not my language. I am an old man stealing things from Twitter.
I think you made that up.
I'm absolutely stealing things from Twitter.
By the way, Cam Newton after the game said, I'm extremely brutally honest with people, and I'm extremely brutally honest with myself. It's time for me to look in the mirror.
Oh, well, is he talking about his clothes?
Yeah,
and do some soul searching.
That might be the issue.
Yeah. We got to tie this into something else ridiculous, because he may not be the most embarrassing quarterback in the National Football League with the headscarf. What is this story about Gardner Minshew and his pregame stretching? Bruh, put on some clothes.
Yeah, he did it. He did it at Washington State, and now he's carried it over into the NFL, especially now that he's the starting quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He stretches in the locker room in just his jock strap. And it's very weird. It's very bizarre. Leonard Fournette said, as long as he keeps completing passes, that's fine. But it's going to be a problem if he starts struggling.
Well, especially with Fournette. We know Fournette likes to throw hands. So
that's true.
We find out that Minshew got his jaw broken after week four or before week four because he's sitting out there stretching in his jock strap.
Right, but yeah, I think
I'm on Len's side.
I think he's okay because I don't know the protocol or if there's an unwritten rule, but I don't think you can punch a naked dude.
Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Technically, he's not naked.
Well,
bare ass.
Essentially.
I had a really interesting point I wanted to make, and you just like grabbed it out of my head and threw it down on the floor with the idea of punching a naked guy.
Well,
wow.
There's got to be some kind of unwritten rule against that. We would never punch a naked dude.
There's the baseball unwritten rule we never knew about right there. Don't punch a naked guy.
Okay, what would a naked dude have to do to get you to punch him?
Dude, we don't want to talk about that on the
topic
air.
Of the day on Friday.
Yeah, we absolutely do not want to talk about that on
it
the
would
air.
Take a lot.
Listen, you know, Uncle Rico should be able to stretch however and wherever he pleases, because the free ball myth around Gardner Minshew makes him who he is. If he showed up to the press conference with the headband, with the mustache, hair flowing out. That's the guy you expect to go into the locker room and stretch in his jock. If he did something different, you would think to yourself, oh, he's faking it at the press conference. No, man, this is the Minshew life. He lives it.
So he could throw a ball over to that mountain over there?
Absolutely he could. That's what Uncle Rico does.
True.
Top story time.
Number one.
Wait, that wasn't the top story.
Not yet. Not yet. We're live.
It should have been the top story.
Live in Chicago, live at the Golden Nugget. Remember tonight, 8 o'clock, another 52 Friday show is last in line. The dudes, mostly, except for the former lead singer of Dio, are playing with a new lead singer at the Golden Nugget tonight, 8 o'clock. You can get tickets for 52 Fridays, and the name's pretty obvious. There's a great concert down there each and every Friday throughout the year. Adam Candy, we always are happy to have him on board for stories like this. He is our stadium and venue expert. All right, well, we heard about Henderson working with the Diamondbacks on some sort of stadium proposal negotiation. Now, guys, we're hearing about Las Vegas. City of Las Vegas is interested in doing the dance with the Diamondbacks. What do we know?
We know that the City of Las Vegas entered into a non-disclosure agreement with the Diamondbacks. That happened in August of 2018, so the timing's not all that different from what the Diamondbacks did with the City of Henderson. Of course, if you didn't see that story, the City of Henderson, I mean, got to the point of drawing up ballpark plans and having a proposal ready to go with the Diamondbacks, and there were a lot of communications that the Review Journal got its hands on that went back and forth between the Diamondbacks and the City of Henderson, with the Diamondbacks as recently as January saying, hey, hope you didn't forget about us, we're still interested. So to me, what this ultimately does is seriously devalues the Henderson situation, because now we make it look like that although you could speculate that the Diamondbacks were just going out there for leverage to try to get their ballpark situation solved in Phoenix, it still looked legit when you get to the point where you've got all these communications and all these ballpark plans drawn up. It looks like this is a legitimate conversation. When we start spreading these NDAs out all over the place, and you can kind of look at it like a Mark Davis shopping for stadiums, whether it's in San Francisco, San Antonio, San Diego, wherever, now it starts to look like, okay, we're getting played. Like, it looks like as a region, we are generally getting played.
And I mean, it happened right after the Henderson one. It could be certainly interpreted like that, and I think that's probably the most likely way to interpret it, the most practical way. It could also be that they were asking Henderson and they started negotiating. They're like, I'm not sure. Maybe Las Vegas right next door. Maybe that's also an option. It happened, like we said, it happened around the same time. Maybe like 2 weeks later, I think it was, with Las Vegas. So maybe they, after 2 weeks, are like, let's go see what Las Vegas has to offer as well. Or maybe they're talking to 25 different cities and they're just trying to get leverage against Arizona on some level and say, hey, there's other places that want us and this is what they're going to give us. Are you going to do the same thing for us if we re-sign a lease there? Either way, I don't see anything as being imminent as far as him moving, for sure. And they have to be at their stadium through 2022. So, it is coming up. It's soon that they could potentially move. But I don't know that, Las Vegas is, next in line and just, like, jumping at it right away.
Up next, we go soup to nuts with the Raiders taking on the Chiefs. Adam Hill has a lot of information, but we're also going to lean on his coworker, Miles Simmons, as he preps us for week two for the Silver and Black.
It's the Big Five at Five, brought to you by Battleborne Injury Lawyers. If you've been injured, call Justin Watkins at Battleborne Injury Lawyers, 570-9000. Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Football Friday down here at the Golden Nugget. Hill, Candy, back to an Adams Family edition of CNC. Steve Cofield is on the road with UNLV football getting ready to take on Northwestern. We are going to talk a little more Raiders football now with Adams Las Vegas Review Journal colleague Miles Simmons, who covers the Raiders for the RJ. What's up, Miles? How you doing?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We are doing pretty well. First, congratulations on your first Antonio Brown free week of coverage.
Thank you.
I realize it's a big accomplishment to finally be able to talk largely about football, so good for you.
I feel so blessed.
And in a way, you are. And you had a very interesting interview that you got with Jonathan Abram, the rookie safety who's now out for the year after having shoulder surgery. Got an interview with him before he went in for that surgery, and I was fascinated by the conversation you had with him and what he told you about how the injury went down and how he adjusted to continue playing in that game. Tell us more about the conversation you had with him.
Yeah, you know, I think that the nice part about Jonathan Abram is that he and I had a chance to talk a couple of times before that interview, so I found it fascinating too, right, when he's talking about how he injured his left shoulder when he knocked somebody out of bounds, which is actually a really heady play because there is no more force out rules. So when you knock a guy out of bounds and he's trying to make a catch and he doesn't have the opportunity to get 2 feet in, it's automatically an incomplete pass. So after that play, he goes to the sideline and he says his arm is feeling a little bit numb, but he was like, okay, I'm fine. I can just adjust. I'll just use my right shoulder to tackle. And so that's what he did for the rest of the game. He played that way throughout the entire second half, and he really had a good game. So, he's really, really a tough guy, and I thought it was interesting, too, that he's like, you know, I wanted them to just give me a cortisone shot so I could keep playing. And it's like, no, dude, like, this is something where you actually need surgery. So they're saving him from himself, probably.
We got to hear what he had to say, but what was your sense of just what his demeanor was and what his attitude was coming off of, I mean, so much promise. He breaks out on the show in training camp. He's a standout. He gets in his first game, and he looks pretty good, and now all of a sudden it's a year until he's going to get to play again.
Yeah, I think he was really disappointed, and I think there is a part of him that says, okay, you know, I get to spend a little bit more time with my daughter, that's a positive thing. I get to spend a little more time with my wife, that's a positive thing, where it wasn't something that I was anticipating being able to do. But this is a guy who loves football. Like, he really loves this game, and I think that's one of the things that attracted John Gruden to him in the first place. And I think we saw a glimpse of that on Hard Knocks, where it was like, oh, you know, you can't, dude, you can't just hit people who are on your team because, you know, we're trying to all get to the same goal. But he just loves football so much and he's so passionate about it. So I think there is a sense of, okay, I'm going to be able to use this time and do some things that I wouldn't be able to do otherwise. But he's a guy who really loves the game and loves to play. So I think there's also a sense of huge disappointment there.
It's the voice of Miles Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter at Miles A. Simmons. Follow his coverage in the Review Journal and, give him a follow just because he has to put up with me, which is really, really tough.
I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
No. Well, you do too. So, I mean, I don't know what you're
talking about. Yeah, I can walk away at the end of the day. That's you work fair. In the same company.
That's fair. Well, we talk about Jonathan Abram and the injury. What about what it does to the team? Like, what is your sense of how much this impacts the secondary?
Well, it's not good. I think that's part of it, right? You know, you have a first-round draft pick, somebody who was playing a lot, and especially now when you're facing one of the most explosive offenses in the league just this week in the Kansas City Chiefs, that's not really ideal. I think one of the nice things, though, is that they were already intending to play Curtis Riley a lot. They played him a bunch in last week's game, and he has a lot of starting experience. He started next 16 games last year for the New York Giants. So if there's a silver lining, it's that you have somebody who is experienced already and you're not just integrating another inexperienced rookie, so to speak, into that position. But yeah, I mean, when you have somebody who can come up and play the run like he can, who can go back and drop into coverage like Jonathan Abram can as well, it's not ideal when you're going to be missing that, especially, like I said, when you have to face the explosive offenses that are in your division. You got to play the Chiefs twice, right? You got to play the Chargers twice. That makes things a lot tougher to handle in the back end.
Miles, this game against the Chiefs this week, I think, is very interesting because of last week for the Raiders and the fact that with the home crowd serenading Antonio Brown and the prevailing sentiment being that the Raiders were playing on a lot of emotion of, we're going to show everybody what we can do. Do you get the sense that can carry forward? The opponent changes significantly, obviously, from Denver to Kansas City, but is that feeling still around the Raiders at the moment?
Well, I love the way you put that, the way they serenaded Antonio Brown, all right? I think there's only so far that can go. And I think that a lot of the team seem to be kind of over everything Antonio Brown related once the week turned. And I think because of the way they came out and the way they performed, they're really ready to put all that stuff behind them. And I think now, because it's a divisional opponent, it's it's one of the final four teams of the NFL last year. That passion and that motivation to go up against that and go up against the class of your division, I think that's fueling them a little bit more than anything from, you know, Bleep Antonio Brown, like, it's the first game of the season, we're excited to be in the Coliseum, you know, to start off our last season in Oakland. I think that's sort of behind you, and now you're into, okay, this is what the season actually is. Hey, we have a win, but now we have to go up against really one of the class teams of the NFL and show that we can actually compete with them and we can go beat them.
What would be a win this week in your mind? I mean, winning the game, obviously, but if it's close, is that a win? If they show some of the signs from last week, including the offensive line being so much improved, the passing game really clicking, Josh Jacobs looking good, the defensive line getting some pressure at times, which was largely based on coverage. I mean, if those things hold up, is that a win even if they lose, or do they have to win this game?
That is such a weird question. Come on, Adam. Right? Like, you play to win the game. Hello, right? I mean, what do you mean? Like, is this because we're in Vegas? But like, if I say, okay, dude, they cover,
yes, they got to cover,
right? Is that a win?
That's my question.
I don't know. No, like, if they win, they win. If they lose, they lose. Right? I understand what you're getting at, though. In the sense that, yes, you would like to see Colton Miller hold up better against Frank Clark than he did last year when the Raiders played the Seahawks, right? You don't want to see Frank Clark getting 2.5 sacks. You don't want to see Sammy Watkins get 198 yards and 3 touchdowns. But I think, look, if they lose, they're not going to be happy about it. I don't think that John Gruden was somebody who, goes into moral victories or whatnot. Like, right, if they lose by 7 like they did to the Chiefs at the Coliseum last year, is that a win? I don't really think so. I think they, in order to really win this game, they have to score more points than the Chiefs. How about that?
That's very literal. I appreciate it.
There's
that.
So much I enjoy about that. Miles Simmons works for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, covers the Raiders, and I first want to compliment you because that is one of the better Herm Edwards that I've heard.
Yeah, that's true.
That was actually pretty on point. Have you practiced it?
Thank you very much. It's just one of those things. Sometimes when the moment just overcomes you, you got to see it, right?
No, and I appreciate the fact that in that moment you were able to step up to what you saw as Adam's inane question. Do you understand how John Gruden feels now when Adam just throws one of those questions out there and you're like, what is that?
Yeah, that's how I roll.
All right, so Miles has to take
the
fifth.
Understand.
No, I was going to say, Miles has to plead the fifth on this one because he still has to work with Adam throughout the year. I completely understand that. So this Chiefs team that's coming in, Miles, I know you had the opportunity to be on the conference call with Andy Reid and talk about how they're adjusting to the loss of Tyreek Hill. But even without Tyreek Hill, the Chiefs looked absolutely phenomenal last week against Jacksonville. What do you expect out of the Chiefs offense against the Raiders? And can the Raiders defense play anything near what they did against Denver?
Well, I think you have to try, right?
I hope they do.
I think the toughest thing about the Chiefs is that they're explosive everywhere. And so I don't know if you guys remember this game. I hope you do, because it was the most phenomenal game I've ever seen in my life, where the Los Angeles Rams took on the Kansas City Chiefs last year, and it was like, I don't know, taking caffeine pills for 3 hours straight when you're watching Monday Night Football. That's not what I usually say, but we're on the radio, so I figured that I should maybe clean that up a bit. Yeah. But when you think about that game, right, there's just offensive explosions everywhere, and you still got really good defensive plays, right? Like, the Rams had 2 defensive touchdowns in that game. So I was talking to LaMarcus Joyner today, who was on the Rams last year. Now he plays nickel corner for the Raiders. And he said, I mean, when you watch that game, you just see that the Chiefs, they're on fire. Right? It's how they describe their offense. They're on fire. And he said, I haven't seen anybody put that fire out in 2-3 years. And so what you have to do is, he said, win your one-on-one matchups. They've got one-on-one players who can win those matchups all over the field. Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, right? LeSean McCoy now in that offense. And he's, of course, familiar with Andy Reid from their shared days in Philadelphia. So because they're a divisional opponent, wonky stuff happens in division games. And these divisional teams, they play each other close. And yes, the Raiders have had a lot of personnel turnover, but you're familiar with that team. You're familiar with what Chiefs week is. I think it's going to be a close game. Do I think the Raiders will win? Probably not, but I think that they can probably keep it close and at least make the Chiefs sweat, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, we're going to wrap on this. We'll turn away from the Raiders a little bit. You referenced kind of the Rams there, seeming to have quite a bit of knowledge as you have been around them for the last few years. I've spent the last 2 weeks trashing the Jared Goff deal, saying it's the end of the Rams as we know them for signing that deal. I know you disagree, so tell people why I'm wrong that Jared Goff's contract ruined the Rams.
Well, first of all, because Sean McVay would not have signed a contract extension if they were not also going to extend Jared Goff. That's something that he has been staunchly in favor of. And so I think the interesting thing that people nationally and people who are not in Los Angeles or have not spent time around that organization seem to think is that Sean McVay is this quarterback genius, and he can do what he's done with Jared Goff with anybody. And having been around him for 2.5 years, that's not the way he feels about it. He feels like Jared Goff has a lot of talent, has the ability to make every throw, and are there things he can improve? Certainly, but it's not like you want to just throw him away and then have to start with some random new quarterback. I think that when people sort of seem to think that that's the way that they could do it down there in Los Angeles, you're discounting the fact of, A, that these are human beings and that they've got human relationships, and also just the fact that people can get better as they get coached more, right? So I think last week probably not a very good indication of what Jared Goff can do as a whole. The Super Bowl is not that either. I think if you look at the NFC Championship game against New Orleans, there were some really, really good throws that he made, if we go all the way back to there. So this is going to be an interesting test for the Rams against the New Orleans Saints, especially since the Saints are coming to their building. But, you know, I think you're wrong because I think you don't know the inner workings of what that situation is, Adam.
Miles Simmons covers the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal alongside Adam Hill. Miles, thanks very much for the time.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, man. See you tomorrow.
All right. We're into the grab bag with Cofield in just a minute.
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co. Cofield & Company presents...
Hey, hold on. Bag up.
Grab bag.
Don't touch it. Don't even look at it.
Only on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, I want to go through some NFL picks here in less than a minute. Grab bag is brought to you by Dustin DeHart, Nova Home Loans. You got to call him today, 577-2600. You can get $20,000 in down payment assistance on a purchase of a home. You can get a $500 coupon towards an appraisal on any purchase or refi. And best of all, well, those are great. If you're not buying right now, you own already. Get that free mortgage tune-up. Call Dustin, Nova Home Loans, 577-2600. It's Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. All right, Ari, get in there.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
So I want to run some NFL picks by you guys. I'll give you two of them because I heard you break them down earlier. I am taking the Lions plus the 1.5 against the Chargers. And I don't care that the Giants – well, I care, but I'm not that worried that the Giants' secondary looked like ass last week because I don't think Josh Allen can take advantage of it, so I'm taking the Giants plus the 2.
I mean, I can't argue with you in either case there, but I said earlier I'm a reluctant Chargers Bills on both.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Giants in the game. I don't love it, but I do like the Chargers in that spot on the road.
I'm taking the Redskins plus 6 against the Cowboys.
Adam?
Yeah. I don't really have a strong take on that game. I think getting points like that at home, you have to look at that side. I'm very interested to see what Adrian Peterson does getting his shot after all of the players last week were upset that he was inactive and that he was upset. Now he's going to get his shot. Will they step up their game for him in his role being pushed back into the starter?
I have Dallas winning the game straight up. The only way I would play that is if I were teasing it down to pick.
Small home favorite. I'm all over Cincy against Jimmy G and company.
Yeah, I like that too. I was looking at that. I'm very down on San Francisco. I thought last week they found a way to win. They got 2 pick sixes. It was not some great performance on the road by the offense to come through in that game. They kind of took advantage of some opportunities. Cincinnati looked way better than I thought they would. I don't know how sustainable that is, but I think it's enough to win the game at home.
Yeah, I took Cincy in the points last week, and I don't think Cincy's good, but we expected them to be awful, and I think they're going to be closer to mediocre. I have no trouble taking the Bengals here.
And I am going to play the Rams minus the 2 against the Saints. RJ Bell kind of talked me off of, although by Sunday I'll probably be back on it.
talk me off of laying 2.5 with the Bears at the Broncos. The Broncos run over the years, first 2 weeks, games at home of 33-3. I guess the logic is, hey, with the altitude, you know, teams just aren't in peak physical shape at the beginning of the season. What do you think of that one? Where are you guys going to go with that one, Bears and Broncos?
I would actually like the Broncos a lot more if the Bears didn't play the way they did last week. I think that they know that they're in a spot where they have to go on the road and get this win. They can't start 0-2 with the kind of aspirations that they have, and they actually got the 3 extra days to prepare as well coming into this game. So I think there's a lot of things going in the Bears' favor.
I'm going to take your stat back even a little farther. Since 1970, weeks 1 and 2, the Broncos are 51-8-2 at home. That is kind of hard to get around in terms of what we look at. And remember, conditioning has changed. Teams can't train as much early in the season as in training camp as they used to. And we got the altitude factored in. I don't love this game either way.
Did you watch Joe Flacco last week?
I did watch Joe Flacco. And if Deshaun Hamilton catches that pass, it is a completely different ball game. Yeah. I don't love the Broncos, but I would go with the Broncos.
Candy, what's your favorite play of the week in the NFL?
Even before RJ said it, I was all over Rams -2. I think that New Orleans got a huge break last week. They got going against Deshaun Watson and the Texans' offensive line just being as awful as it was. If they had protected him at all, I think the Texans win that game by 10 points. And I think we're underrating just how good the Rams' defense is. All in all, I like Los Angeles.
Adam Hill, you have a favorite play?
Well, it's Monday, but it's your boys. I'll take the Jets at home against Cleveland. I don't think Simeon is that much of a downgrade. As much as I like Darnold, Simeon is a capable player. It's been a while since he was in there. But I think he's got enough ability with that defense, which I think could be okay, to come through against Cleveland, who I know that they're going to come out fired up and aggressive and try to, you know, wipe out what happened last week. But I think there's an issue with Baker Mayfield right now, and I don't know that a week is going to fix it.
Chiefs-Raiders is intriguing because Chiefs are laying 7. That's down. 79% of the tickets are on the Chiefs, but the line is going down. Who wants the Raiders?
Good luck.
Nope. I can't get in. If this thing got to 6.5, okay, some folks walking through
Seahawks,
the lobby.
Seahawks fans.
If this thing got to 6.5, I would feel comfortable with the Chiefs. Yep. I don't love it at 7.
That's exactly what I just texted somebody that asked me about the game.
All right, get in there, Ari.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
UNLV, how about this one now? Now down to 17.5, dogs against Northwestern here in Chicago. Announcement comes out yesterday that Northwestern's starting running back, Bowser, will be out. What do you guys think? What's going to happen in the game?
I mean, I'm not running to the window on this one, but I think it's going to be low scoring enough that the 17.5 is going to loom a little larger than it would ordinarily. So I'll take the points.
Yeah, I would take the points also. I think there's no question Northwestern wins the game straight up, but Northwestern offensively has not been that strong even with starting personnel. And I gave this stat earlier. I'll give it again. Under Pat Fitzgerald as a home favorite, under 70% of the time, I don't think Northwestern scores enough to cover.
Yeah, I think Fitzgerald is going to play it really close to the vest. I'm not sure that he's airing it out after his new quarterback, the transfer from Clemson, you know, posted a 6-17 with 2 interceptions in the first game. But who knows? I mean, logically, based on the fact that the Rebels still haven't solved everything at right corner yet, they would be throwing over the top a lot and also testing the safeties and the linebackers over the top down the middle of the field. But we'll see if Fitzgerald breaks from his normal mold and takes a bunch of deep shots against the Rebels. All right, back in there.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Do we go down the weirdo rabbit hole here? I think I'm going to stay away from it.
When do we ever stay away from the weirdo rabbit hole?
That's our demo right there.
There's a lot in the grab bag. One, Ari says today, I didn't research this, today is National Hug Your Boss Day. Can we actually, not making light of this, but can we have
Me Too
a Hug Your Boss Day with Me Too?
We shouldn't.
Can we have a consensual Hug Your Boss Day? Like you ask your boss first and say, hey, it's Hug Your Boss Day. Can I hug you?
Even then, there's going to be lingering, and you just don't know. It's just an uncomfortable situation. Let's not celebrate that day.
By the way, when did bosses need hugs? Well, their lives are great.
But see, here's the thing, Steve. Ari's the one who brought it up. He wants to give you a hug.
I was not thinking for 1 second of me as a boss.
We'll ask Ari about that later.
Who wants to hug anyone in that, like, in the workplace. It's just so weird. It's work. You're supposed to be working.
Back in there, Ari.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
All right, food choice. What do I do in Chicago? A hot dog, another Italian beef, or deep dish?
Italian beef.
Italian beef, without question.
No question.
Wow,
deep
a
dish,
second.
Deep dish isn't pizza.
All right. I had Italian beef last night. I can go back in. They did have the Italian beef and sausage combo. I might
did you go
that.
To Al's?
Did not go to Al's. Went to Portillo's.
Okay.
Portillo's. All right, that'll wrap it. We'll see you over the weekend at the Westgate.